Today is May 16th, 1984, and this is the Yukon Koyukuk Biographical Sketch Project. I'm continuing on with my conversation with Johnson Moses in Fairbanks, and my name is Wendy Arendale. We're at the Patient Hostel in Fairbanks making this recording. Last night, Johnson, we were talking about the yearly round, the seasonal round, and what that was like when you were a boy. Is there anything that you want to add about that? Can you think of things that would supplement what we said before?
The year round?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In my starting life, you know, when I was growing up, you know, when I said remember reading, cooking, and living, seems like everything was start in the spring, you know, in July.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we all just kind of start from, the way I think about it when I think back, you know. Because in July, people get together from about middle June to right day after 4th of July, and everybody go to a different spring, the fish camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fish camp.
Mm-hmm. And
from July, everybody go to fish camp, then in the fall, and around middle of September, they all start coming back. They haul their load all summer. If they have good season for
mm-hmm.
fishing in the summer, then they haul their winter food to the village, Elkhart, to store their food away for the winter, if they got any fish and stuff, you know. So, in September, last part of September, everybody moved back to the village. And from there, most of the people move out for the fall camp.
Mm-hmm.
But there was more people in Elkhart Village because of the school. People that like to see their kids go to school, so they have to live in the village. The men go out in the fall sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Freeze up out there in the trapping camp or someplace. Then they come back for Thanksgiving for 2-3 days. The man's do, you know, that was a big day for them. So they have kind of little potlatch again, get together for 2-3 days, then they leave again, the
mm-hmm.
man's leave, or sometime when the, like us, we used to live in Henshaw, that we had a little cabin there.
Mm-hmm.
That the people that raised me, you know, till I was 13, this was Henry Moses and Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Moses was my mother, Sita, real brother. He was older and I didn't even know he was my uncle, but in a way they raised me till I was 13 and I called them Dad and Mom, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we live in Henshaw. We get to Henshaw in July, around middle of July, and we stay there all summer, they're fishing there. All summer. Sometime around middle of August, there's not too much fish in Henshaw, so they move up to South Fork,
mm.
where there's more, all different kind of fish, you know, because there's big lakes close by and those little white fish,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of fish come out from the lakes,
mm-hmm.
so they stay up there for a while.
Now these wouldn't be salmon, these would be things
no.
like pike and white fish,
yeah,
and stuff
pike
like
and
that.
White fish, yeah, because there weren't that much dog salmon,
uh-huh.
king salmon. If they're lucky, I remember they used to get about 4 or 5 king salmon, I think, in Henshaw. That's,
uh-huh.
that's the summer
uh-huh.
fishing,
uh-huh.
but they weren't that much king salmon.
Uh-huh.
And dog salmon, what do you call big catch, they used to have 10 bundle fish there. There were 30 fish in a bundle.
Uh-huh.
And they would have 10 bundle fish, that's for the winter supply.
Uh-huh.
And that was a lot of fish for them.
Uh-huh.
And from there they moved to another camp in back Fish Creek. And we stayed there till just before fish up. We started to see ice along the shore. That must be around middle of September, you know. So they want to move back to Henshaw again, back down the river.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that they started loading up all their little white fish and everything. They bundled them mm-hmm. in a small bundle and load up the boat and move back down to Henshaw. And pretty soon, first thing I know, it started freezing up ice, floating, and here we never see Alakakit from middle of July or sometime mm-hmm. around 2-3 days after 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'll be in Henshaw, move back. Then 2-3 days before Thanksgiving, they took us to Alakakit just to see the school program they have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's all. So they have little patlats, like, you know, for the kids, Thanksgiving. And day after Thanksgiving, they took us back to Henshaw again. And we stayed there. They were trapping and hunting. There was not too much to hunt, you know, but anyway, they were getting something all the time. There was not too much marten or fox or link or any other animal that they trap, you know. There was not that many, but they catch enough to buy shells and food when they get back to the village from the store.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they used to make a living. No job, no place. Nobody had big money or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
But seems like those days people was really happy because they never live in town all the time, you know. They're out in camp
mm-hmm.
most all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for Christmas, about 2-3 days before Christmas, we go back to Alakakit again.
Mm-hmm.
The first place, Henshaw, was about 15 or 20 miles upriver from Alakakit.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our house was.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhere around 25 miles by the trail, winter
mm-hmm.
trail.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 days before Christmas, did we move back to town. We have house in Alakakit too. So we stayed there till about 3 days after New Year. That's 2 weeks about we
mm-hmm.
spent in Alakakit, moved back to Henshaw.
Mm-hmm.
And in January, around the last part of January, they moved out in the tent next, which is about 30 or 40 miles east of Henshaw.
Mm-hmm.
That's towards Canoody Flat, you know. And we started living in tent next from last part of January. They started hauling caribou meat. My mother would be working on caribou skin, you know, cutting
uh-huh.
the fur off and
uh-huh.
cleaning them,
uh-huh.
hanging them out. Some is for tanning some caribou hide or for rope, babies rope and stuff, you know, what they make snowshoes and sled.
Right.
So she would be working on that mostly all the time, every other day between her snaring rabbit and she used to hunt at the same time,
mm-hmm.
trapping little waste because we were small and we have to stay in tent alone
mm-hmm.
in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
But I was 12 years old about now then, you know, then
mm-hmm.
I could, I still had with two little kids, you know, my sister and my brother. They were, my sister used to be was about a year younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And my other brother, Tony Morris, was about 4 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And March was the greatest time of the year for us, because it's been a long day and warm. We know we're going to go to village pretty soon, first of April about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in daytime we used to stay outdoors and we were doing that one time again. Our tent burned down while we were playing outdoors.
Uh-oh.
There was this little piece of tent left when we finally found out our tent was burning. It was 10 by 12. My mother is away all day. It was a sad day for us because I don't know what my mother would tell us, you know. I was the oldest. And anyway, we grabbed snow and we put it out, whatever was left out of that tent. Stovepipe was just standing out there with nothing holding it.
Oh my.
And we were just standing outdoors. It was a good thing it was in the middle of March and it was a warm day.
Yeah.
Finally my mother come back towards evening and she would be screaming and hollering, running towards us. She thought if we got hurt or something.
You know. Oh yeah.
And she was really nervous. So when she come back, we were all there. And we got hurt? No, we never got hurt. And she started questioning us what we were doing when the tent burned. We told them, our youngest brother of mine, he told my mother that we were feeding our dogs. We were trying to make our dogs fat so they could pull us back to town in April. And that's all. That's what I remember. I always remember we were trying to get our dogs fat so they'd be strong dogs to pull us back to Alcacket. So from there, when she come back, she had another piece of canvas, what they use for sleigh cover, they call it. She sewed that one on top, make another tent out of it. It didn't take her long, I remember, just before evening, she had tent up again for us.
Amazing.
She put all kinds of canvas together. Anyway, they had two sleigh covers. They had two sleds all the time. So they had two sleigh covers, she sewed those on. At that time, I want to move back to my grandpa now.
Sure.
I was 12 years old now then. Around middle of March, my grandpa, Big William, came to us. That was my mother, Lucy Statue. Her dad came and started staying with us. They kind of move around away from that place. They don't stay in that place where we burn the tent to. I don't know why, it is superstitious. They move away about 5 miles, I think, to put up new camp again, first camp. My grandpa would be staying with us, so I kind of move back and forth with to him, you know, start getting close to him. I want to go back to my grandpa. So the next year, I was 13, that's when I moved back to him. I stayed with my mother all summer. Then in the fall, he was going back up South Fork and we were in Henshaw. He picked me up and I moved back to him. And I started staying away from the village more long yet than 13, we leave in July, then come back before Christmas. It go on like that till I was 16. When I was 16, then my old man was getting old, and he couldn't work for himself that much anymore. He was a really old man, I think. And we started kind of stay around the village more than. But my brother, who he raised, another guy, you know, William. I started go hunting with him and everything up South Fork, so I didn't have to stay in town that much again. So every fall we move up to South Fork and we trap out of there. If I was lucky, I would catch one marten in the fall, or one mink. Sometimes nothing. Sometimes nothing because there was nothing to catch. And I had traps that there was about 6 traps, that's all I had while I was growing up till I was around 19. From 13 years old up to 19 I had about 6 traps, that's all. And today people have all kinds of traps and nobody traps. And that 6 number 1 trap, I used to move them back and forth, move them to different place wherever we see mink track or marten track. So we had to work hard to catch something.
Sure.
And if we ever make money, and we'll go back to town, first thing my grandpa used to make buy shells, 22 shells. 2 boxes of shells, that was enough for the whole spring for me. That's 100 rounds. And I had 22 single shots since I was 11 years old up to I was about 20. Mm-hmm. I still had it when I got married with my wife. And I don't know what happened to it. A single shot, that's all I had. Two box shells. When I ran out of shells in spring before, while we're still hunting muskrat, and my grandfather used to give me 5 22 long shells for one day.
Uh-huh.
That's one day. Because if they gave me about 10, then I just shoot it out for nothing.
Sure.
5 shells, that's all sometimes. Sometimes if you give me a lot of shells, you give me 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really teach us how to try safe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we never make that much money, you know. Try to teach us how to, if we have any shells left over, then we try share it with other people too.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
my grandpa had his other children, you know, they've grown up and married, they had a bunch of kids, you know, living different places, and he always kind of moved back between them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they're short of shells or anything, and if he got any, then he gave them so much too.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. He was kind of teaching us how to share with other people, you know. They used to really work on us, those old people. Today we never work on our kids that much because they make easy money to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once they get a job like firefighting, they make so much money in just 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
or maybe 3 weeks, you know, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They make so much money and they just spend it just like that because it's too easy to make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the stuff was really cheap while I was growing up. That's only how we used to survive, I guess. It was today. Now, we're coming back to that time again because they wouldn't be buying fur again pretty soon if there's nothing to trap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a hard time again.
Mm-hmm.
The job, we don't get jacked that easy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be, what do you call union?
Mm-hmm.
That being union to get good job and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we never go for that around home. Now and then, you know, we get job, but we're not in union, so it'll be kind of hard to get job pretty soon.
Sure.
If you want to ask me anything, you know, you could stop me and ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, you're doing just fine. Mm-hmm. I was making a list here of
mm-hmm.
some of the places that we were talking about as you were going along, and maybe a little later sometime we'll pull out the map and you can show me where those places are on the map and we'll mark them on the map. So
yeah.
One thing that could go into the biography is a map showing,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the places that you've talked about. I think that would be really interesting to people because, you know, places are important too. You know?
Really, really, that's right, you know. I like to see that, you know. When we're taking anything like this, you know, we gotta have that map, so we'll say where we was and everything.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you want me to pull it out, why just tell me? And
we could work on it a little bit now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe while I'm getting these out, I can ask you one other question.
Yeah.
When did you start learning to drive dogs? Who taught you about dogs, and when did you start learning about dogs?
Okay. You know, I was a babysitter when I was growing up while I was living with my mother, Lucy.
Uh-huh.
I was a babysitter because both of them, Henry Moore is my uncle.
Uh-huh.
And my mother, Lucy, they were both trapper and hunter. And they never could give me a chance to go out, try make a living or anything.
Sure.
So they had 5 dogs. And I never could drive those dogs because they were so big. They were, I don't know, some kind of dogs. And they were mean dogs. And when mm-hmm. I was growing up, I was kind of scared, you know. I don't mm-hmm. like to see. They were big animals, you know.
Like big freight dogs.
Yeah, big freight dogs. And I was scared of them. So when I was 11 years old, about and I started driving one dog. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all I could handle out of those five dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My mother don't let us drive dogs anyway. She said the dogs might turn around and fight with us or something, you know.
So no.
She was kind of making us scared, you know, so
sure.
I couldn't touch dogs.
Sure.
Till I was 11 years old, I started driving one dog. When I was 13 years old, when I moved back to my grandfather, he had three dogs. And I started driving dogs. Well, that was a big team for me, driving three dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started having my own team, when I was 16 about, you know, they were still my grandfather's dogs yet, you know, but
mm-hmm.
I was the one that drived them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had four. We had four dogs. All the way till I married my wife when I was 23, and I still had four dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a big team.
Mm-hmm.
And there was my brothers, they started driving dogs ahead of me almost,
mm-hmm.
earlier than me.
Because mm-hmm.
My real mother, Cesar and Billy, you know, they let my youngest brother drive dogs early.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's 4 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
He was driving dogs already.
Mm.
I was one of those persons that start really late. And I guess I had the hardest time too, because I had my grandfather to depend on, my mother who raised me, you know, Lucy. And when I find out my other mother and dad, my real parents,
mm-hmm.
when I was 13 years old, I was kind of mixed up a little bit.
I could see where that would make you, really give you a shock,
mm-hmm.
you know, give you
yeah.
kind of a real startling experience
yeah.
in your life. Yeah.
I kind of feel bummed, you know, after a while, you know. I wonder why my real mother never keep me, or my dad.
Uh-huh,
know.
Uh-huh.
I didn't kind of really get that close to them till I was about 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I started going closer to my youngest brother, you know.
Uh-huh.
My youngest brother, Limburg, Brooklyn. Him and me today is where it's like a friend, yeah?
Yeah,
really.
That's
and
good.
We get together, we teach each other and everything like a good buddies, you know. But we're real brothers.
That's real important, those kinds of
mm-hmm.
ties are
yeah.
important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you, just let me ask a couple more questions about dogs and then we'll get right to the man. Mm-hmm. Was there a preference for males or females, either one in a team like that?
Either one. These are parents, they had one female dog in,
mm-hmm.
in their team.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes nothing. They have all male, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to race pups all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have those four dogs or three dogs, sometimes three dogs, no female, they had
mm-hmm.
all male dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Some people had five dogs and they have female dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When they ever those, that one dog have about two or three pups, I never see eight pups one time.
Mm-hmm.
Those dogs too long ago, I don't know how. But anyway, they always have about three pups or four.
Mm-hmm.
Then.
Smaller litters.
Yeah, those four pups people's dog have, if they want to give them away, then when they get so big, when they can eat by themselves now, then they give them away.
Uh-huh.
The
uh-huh.
people that who don't own a dog, you know, who don't have enough, if they have two dogs, they don't have one more, and they pick up pup, you know,
mm-hmm.
they erase it.
Mm-hmm. Did they have much trouble with dog diseases when you were young?
Yeah, when I was small, you know, I remember the dogs, once in a while they die with distemper, you
mm-hmm.
know, what they call distemper.
Right.
Yeah.
Did they have any way of dealing with that? Did people do anything for the dogs if they got sick like
nothing.
That?
Nothing. They have nothing to do for them.
And yeah.
Sometimes dogs survive, you know, from
uh-huh.
that distemper. And I don't know, the dog is kind of weak, I guess.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Anyway, even when I was growing up, you know, not quite a while back when we used to have dogs, before they have dogs shot and everything,
mm-hmm.
our dogs used to still get distemper.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they survive from it. We still use them 2 or 3 years again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about rabies? Did you have much trouble with rabies when you were young?
Our dogs never detect rabies that I know of.
Uh-huh.
I know somebody else dogs did, you know, uh-huh. around Allicacket, but it was not all the dogs. It was uh-huh. just once, I remember.
Yeah. Did you ever see, as a boy or even as a young man, did you encounter many rabid animals like foxes or other animals that had rabies, you know, like wild animals?
I was in the village one time. Rabies fox went through Allicacket.
Mm.
And my brother, William, who I grew up with, he had to, I wonder how he just make up his mind, he got to get that fox. That's just the way he was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get that fox, you know. Because we heard about rabies already, mm-hmm. and this rabies fox, he come across the river, somebody saw him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it run up the bank right by my brother William's in-laws, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have dogs tied up right behind the house. And this fox would, red fox would run along. It was kind of cold, February, I think, somewhere, or March. Anyway, it was cold that day. Somebody saw the fox through the window, or outdoors, I guess, and he said the fox had kind of foams on the mouth and
mm-hmm.
everything, and
mm-hmm.
was kind of running along past the house, and bit one dog, and just keep on going. That was, it grew through Alatna, you know, on
mm-hmm.
the other side of the village,
mm-hmm.
and my wife, she was just a little girl, then, you know, they were staying in the house, and next door, her uncle's house, somebody holler that they were sitting down. They had low windows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was fox scratching the window outside.
Mm.
But and then it quit and ran to Nick's house.
Mm-hmm.
My wife says they saw the fox run to their outside of their house and kind of walk around for a while and run down the bank and run across to the other village. That's when it went across and went right by those dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one dog was kind of walking around out there, and that fox just ran up there and bit him a little bit and keep on going.
Mm.
And right there, my brother William, he hooked up four dogs. I guess that's what he had, you know. And it took him about 4 miles to catch up to that fox.
Wow.
And that fox, it was lucky, I guess. That fox never even seemed to turn back and
yeah.
bite the dogs or anything. And when the fox turned off, and they put on snowshoes and caught up to the fox and shot him and cut the head off and sent it to the lap in Fairbanks.
Uh-huh.
We started having an airplane then, that was quite a while back.
Uh-huh.
And this I had rabies.
Mm.
So that's the first rabies I see, and the same thing happened to William again, my brother William.
Mm-hmm.
And in the camp, in winter camp, in South Fork,
mm-hmm.
that was his trapping camp.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was staying in the house pretty soon. Dogs bark outside. He looked out, there was a wolf standing right by his dogs.
Mm.
The wolf never bite nothing, you know, yet.
Mm-hmm.
He was just kind of standing around. I don't know what he was going to do, you know. So he just grabbed his rifle. He was standing, laying against the tent outside. And he shot the wolf right in there, too.
Mm.
So that's the only person I know
mm-hmm.
shot two rabies animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you guess what year? Can you give me sort of an idea what year that first, when he shot the fox?
The fox would be about 1942, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the wolf would be 1945 or 1946.
Mm.
That's the year that there was a lot of rabies that mm-hmm. we heard about, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask is that I know people who are interested in things like how rabies has spread and where
yeah.
rabies has appeared mm-hmm. at different times in the past
mm-hmm.
would be interested in knowing that. So
mm-hmm.
that's one reason I asked on the tape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me turn this off for just a second. We'll get these. We have the map out now. We've got the Bettles Quad,
mm-hmm.
and Johnson and I are looking at that right now. Johnson, you were just mentioning the name of an old place right in here. Can you say that name for me
yeah.
again?
Yeah, Costa Sola. That's right lower end of the hill, they call it Kirkteslo.
Uh-huh. Could you put that on the map, just put a little dot or an X where that was located roughly?
Yeah. Okay. Yep, it's north of Kirkteslo. Okay, yes, I put an X on it, but,
okay.
But there's trail right through between here.
Okay, let me put a number on that so we can key that. Let's put call that J1 for Johnson. Mm-hmm. And can you sketch that trail for me?
The trail through here?
Mm-hmm. The one that you were talking about that went to...
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Go back to
them. Okay. And that goes from the site that we've called J1.
Yeah, Kirkteslo.
Gachlehold?
Yeah, Kirkteslo.
Up to the... the winter trail to Allakaket that's it's on the map.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me mark that trail J2. And you were also saying there was an old trail to Tananaw from that area?
From in here. I don't know the trail really, you know, but my dad, you know, Billy Broken, he used to tell us about that trail, you know. But my youngest brother, Limbrook, know about that trail.
Okay.
Because my dad used to talk about from Kirkteslo, from that from this little river. You go so far up and you turn down towards this Tanna trail, old mill trail.
Yeah.
And you hit it. It's close from the spring camp, so that's how they used to have that trail.
Okay, and that's the trail that goes south by like Todatonton.
Yeah.
I don't say that right, I know.
Todatonton. Yeah.
Okay. Earlier, when we were talking, you were talking about some of the places that you had lived. Can you show me where Henshaw was?
Henshaw, okay. Okay, now there's Henshaw right there.
Okay, let's put a little X there too.
That's where we had our house.
Okay, and that's at the mouth of Henshaw Creek where it comes into the river.
Yeah.
Okay, let's call that J3. Okay. How many people lived in Henshaw?
There was just us, that's all used to live there. But anyway, that's a main trail to South Fork and back. Fish Creek,
okay.
Winter time, yeah. So, and on the river. So when people go back and forth, they used to stay in that one little cabin. The cabin was like 14 by 16, I think.
Well, that must have gotten kind of crowded when there was your family there and visitors too.
I know when the visitors come in, you know, people coming back for Christmas or Thanksgiving, we were kind of crowded for one night. It's empty again.
Were there any other cabins, old cabins or pit houses or anything like that there?
Yeah, in South Fork, there was about four cabins in South Fork right there. Sure.
Okay, let's put an X there. Right where it says cabin
here?
Yeah,
that's your cabin, yeah.
Okay, and we'll call that J4. Yeah. And that's what you, when you talk about South Fork, that's what you mean, right? That place?
Yeah.
Okay. Were there other places on South Fork that your family used?
Yeah. It's called Fish Creek now. Oh, here's Fish Creek.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. There used to be a big camp right in here. That spring camp and summer camp right in here.
Okay. Let's call it J5. Did that have a native name? Did that place have a native name?
Tsukudekatte. Tsukudekatte, they used to call it.
Who else used to be there besides your family?
there was when I was small, I was staying with my mother Lucy and Dad Henry. While I was staying with them, I remember there was David family and Robert Williams family, and there was my mother, you know, who were there, and there was Old Henry and his family, and their son Titus Henry used to be. They're gone long ago, you know. These people, what I'm telling story, but they were all gone already. And Big Peters and his wife, Louise. And there would be my grandpa and my grandfather's stepson, Jack, his name used to live there. I think that's like one whole family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was about six family about, you know, all related, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
You were also mentioning a tent camp that your family used as part of that seasonal round.
Winter camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, that south of, east of Henshaw it would be. That was Henshaw, Noretta.
No, wait a minute.
That South Fork,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
Okay. We used to have trail right through this Munkoka, yeah.
Go ahead and draw that trail on if you like.
Yeah. Let's see that. Yeah. Hence, this Henshaw, but the could come out wrong place in here. Oh no, it's all right. Yeah, anyway, we had trails through here, see? This winter trail. Come through there and all the way over to Chalatna. Okay, there's two lakes. Yeah, that's where a winter camp used to be, right in here.
Okay. Go ahead and put an X.
That's a winter camp. We'll go through this lakes, you know. That's about 30 or 40 miles from Henshaw.
Okay, let's mark that J6. Mm-hmm. That's your winter tent camp.
Yeah.
And did that have a native name?
Kachangi.
Kachangi?
Kachangi.
Kachangi.
From Kachangi, we go up to. While I was growing, you know, we had another camp right there.
Ah, okay.
What they call Banadaltina.
Banadaltina?
You
say it once more, would you please?
Banadaltina.
Okay.
That means this hill was kind of. This. Grains all around, you know. That's what it means. So that was our winter camp. From Kachangri to Gandalpini and back. And this year before I was born, you know, my mother said used to go over to what they call Old Man Camp, you know, on pipeline. There's Old Man Camp, and from there they go over to Stevens Village. The drains go towards Stevens Village, but they used to hit those drains way up on the head of the drains and go down. That's where all the moose was when, just before my time and before I was born, somewhere around 1915 about, you know.
In those drainages towards Stevens Village?
Towards Stevens Village, yeah. And there's a name for them. They call them Ujano. I bet the Stevens Village, those people, there's mostly are people, my relative in Stevens Village.
Sure.
I bet they know about that Ujano. Yeah. That's where people used to get their moose in winter time then. Look, from March, they start hold their loop back with three dogs,
mm-hmm.
all the way from over there, all the way down to Canoody Flat.
Wow.
That's where they spring, that they make dry meat there.
Uh-huh. Wow, that would be a long haul.
Mm-hmm.
Help me with this name once again.
Kachangi.
Kachangi.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means grassy lake.
Grassy
in my language, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Do you feel comfortable drawing the rest of this trail, or would you, however you feel about it, do it if you want to, but it would be nice to have it if you feel comfortable
yeah.
drawing.
Munkoka is our base camp most of the time when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Right in here. Right in this
mm-hmm.
point right there was our base camp.
Uh-huh.
When we're coming from Hemsworth, which is about 5 miles, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's our, they had to tent in here mostly all the time.
Mm.
Either from here, they had another tent in Holesville, what they call grass, Moss Lake, they call it
mm-hmm.
in my language. Moss Lake, no, where it is now. Yeah, it's in here someplace. Yeah, Moss Lake is right in here. That's where the Moss Lake was. They had tent here, and the where I call where the tent burned down with us was
mm-hmm.
was right in here. In this area right there,
mm-hmm.
that's where the tent burned down with us.
Okay.
So you see how many different places we had tents just so far apart
mm.
because they didn't have that many dogs, you know, four dogs, five dogs,
uh-huh.
about 8 miles a day, that's all they could travel.
Uh-huh.
That's the longest traveling one day because they had to pull, my dad had to be in his own harness too along with the dogs.
Sure. Wow. So those tents were just left up there
yeah.
during the winter?
There would be two tents, one 10 by 12 and one 8 by 10.
Uh-huh.
And that 8 by 10, you know, they keep moving back and forth all the time.
Oh, okay.
It never stay one place, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But the big tent, well, they always take it along.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay, this base camp here on Lake Minkoka,
yeah.
did that have a name other than the Lake Minkoka or something like
no,
that?
It no, just not that I don't know.
Okay. Mm. Let's call that one J-8.
Mm-hmm.
And the Moss Lake tent we'll call J-9.
Yeah.
You want to say the name for that once more for me? For this one?
In Moss Lake?
Mm-hmm.
wait a minute.
Okay.
I got my old language all mixed up.
Holesville. Okay. Say once more for me, please.
Holesville.
Okay. The reason I have you repeat them mm-hmm. is that it's easier for Eliza to
yeah.
describe them if Holesville. She has it
yeah.
repeated a couple times.
Yeah. Holesville means it's like a floating marsh, you know. Floating marsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little
yeah.
pot pad of
yeah.
moss floating.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the place where the tent burned down will label J-10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We call it Nibal Dik Onten.
Nibal
Dik Onten.
Nibal Dik Onten.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's where our tent burned down. And Kachangwi and Benodal Tilni.
Mm-hmm. Benodal Tilni.
And there's lakes around here got names, all different names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's Canoody Trail. All those little lakes have name all the way through.
Mm, mm. Well, sometime maybe when we can spend more time on names, we should sit down and should get you to get those. Maybe when we're working in August on
mm-hmm.
the historic sites, we could
yeah.
do that. Okay.
And see this up Henshaw,
mm-hmm.
our winter camps, there's a name for them. Like
mm-hmm.
this, Took the Captain in Fish Creek, there's Fish Creek here, yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another Lake Muncoka again.
Mm-hmm.
There's two of them really.
Right,
really.
Right.
But we call this Muncoka in South Fork.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's label that one J11.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second.
Yeah, second, yeah.
Lake Muncoka.
Number two Muncoka. We call it number two Muncoka. Yeah.
Last night, you were talking about the fact that there were several camps in this Canute Flats area. Now, were these the same ones we were talking about? Because it takes me a while to get so I recognize the names. Okay, this was one of the others we were talking about.
Yeah.
Let's label that one.
That's the biggest spring camp there is in the whole Canute Flats. It's Tihorban.
Okay.
Tihorban.
Okay, and we'll label that one J12.
Mm-hmm.
And who used to stay there?
There used to be Chief Henry and his wife Bessie.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt Bessie.
Mm-hmm.
She's still living. Bessie Henry.
I've met Grandma Bessie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's a wonderful person.
She's a really wonderful mom. We call her mom. That's everybody's mother.
Uh-huh.
Because she's the only one living from our mother.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she's like my mother too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I always call her mom, and that was their spring camp and their place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they moved away. Then their son Matthew Henry was there for a while. Then after a while.
Okay. And you were saying her daughter was using it?
Yeah, Jane William. They left there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But they moved away next, so. But there's still Bessie Henry's grandchildren is in Alakakik, so we have to hang on to that place at the Tihorban and Tatskoka, all around. My brother, Limbrook Brookman, he's got the Gunilbanga. That's another big spring camp they used to have. I never did stay in spring camp in that place, but that my brothers grew up in there.
Can we mark that one too?
Yeah, okay. Gunilbanga. Okay. Gunilbanga right here.
Okay, let's mark that J13.
Yeah.
Okay, and we got this one that we marked J1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were there others that we should mark in that area that you remember?
Yeah, there's another big spring camp down here someplace, but I can remember the name. They call it Knox Lake, that's all I know.
Mm-hmm. Knox Lake?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Knox Lake, there's a big spring camp right in this area someplace. It comes through this place that used to be my uncle Jimmy Kaikuk's spring camp.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call that J14.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just put a circle around it
like
that so that we know it's not an exact spot but that general area.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's one of the really old place.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody got allotment in there, but it's a historical site now.
Mm-hmm.
I think they mark it already, you know, because we put that down first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that one of the 14H sites, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Did BIA go in there?
Yeah,
and
I think that's
that?
The one, because somebody goes to Alakak, you know, and let us sit down and ask us where is a historical site, you know.
Was that Alice, maybe, the lady with the long pigtail in the back?
I don't know. I can remember, you know. I don't have that kind of memory, you know. Yeah.
Right. My friend Alice Lynch has worked for BIA doing that kind of work, and I think she may have talked to you sometime in the past.
Yeah.
She's a lady, I would guess, who's maybe 10 years younger than you are, and she has long black hair that she usually wears in a pigtail, one pigtail down her back.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't many people her age that look like that are doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
Usually it's, you know, younger people, mm-hmm. so I thought maybe you might remember.
Yeah, maybe. Sometimes people always come around and they say, they know us, and I can't remember.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sure. Well, this is really helpful. This will be neat. We can make a map
mm-hmm.
and put a lot of this information on the map and put that in the biography. I think that would be really interesting to people to know where those old places were.
Mm-hmm.
So you never got to go to school in Allakaket, it sounds like.
No, I never got to go. I was in school house, a few times mm-hmm. while I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 16 and I had lots of other things to do, I thought I would be a trapper and hunting mm-hmm. was more
mm-hmm.
I was more interested in those things,
mm-hmm.
I never think about school was going to be that important,
mm-hmm.
If it was important to me them days, I would go to school real hard, but it was the hunting and trapping was more important, mm-hmm. and we don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to learn how to fishing and stuff, with fish traps. I never make no fish trap or nothing, but I see our old people, my dad and my uncle, they used to make fish trap.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did to help was put the post down the river, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's all I did to help to put the dam in the river and mm-hmm. put the fish trap, three or four fish trap in the river.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, well, we're kind of talking about education kinds of things.
Okay.
And can you think of other things that your old man, Big William,
mm-hmm.
taught you when he was trying to teach you things that you would need to know to be a man?
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I'm thinking in terms of what kids might want to know now about how it felt and the things that you had to learn. We've talked about some of them, mm-hmm. in fact, quite a few of them, but I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. is there anything else that you could think of that we ought to put on the tape
mm-hmm.
that he tried to teach you as far as how to be a man in those days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. First, when they start teaching us how to, the surviving thing was really important to our older parents,
mm-hmm.
grandfather and everything. And they would try to teach us how to let us camp alone is first thing. Someplace else, not close to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of the person who camped alone while I was old. I was about 14 years old, I guess, when first time I camped alone because I grew up a babysitter,
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of worried to camp out a long way away from town.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Fish Creek. There was an old cabin there. I could never forget that place when I was 14 years old. Camp out alone in that old cabin. And people used to tell stories. You could hear anything during the night. You would hear something,
Mm-hmm.
But I was lucky. Maybe I was too sleepy and too tired. And I stayed overnight in that cabin. I never hear anything, but anyway. I was all ready to travel next day, and here it was in February, it was half a day gone already. I sleep all morning.
Mm.
I had a short day that day to get to my uncle who was staying in the camp all winter since last fall,
mm-hmm.
since sometime in November, I guess my other uncle, Robert William, left him way out in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And this is middle of January now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of short day when I got to him. He was way out in the camp alone. What he did really good for me was Hebrick Trail Torch where I was going to come. It was about 7 or 8 miles away from the camp. So when I hit that track, and I knew I was going to live now. And my grandfather used to work on all of us. You know, he'd tell us, when you start hunting, first day, if you're going to go out alone, you have to look at the direction you're going to go. Look at the direction, real good where you're going to be. And you already kind of know, you know, they walk with us, you know, all over the place. We follow them around. He used to tell us, don't just look at me, that's all, look at the area where you're walking. Because we don't have no compass or anything, you know. So we kind of look at the area, then that way they teach us real, real fast. That's going to school, that. So they'll be walking around with us, pretty soon they tell us to go someplace alone. So we have to walk around someplace. But I was one of those person who didn't go too far because I was afraid that I can't get lost first thing. Yeah, and they tell us not to shoot anything. What we don't, we wouldn't use. Like birds. And if we're going to get rabbit, you know, we have to take care of it. We have to clean it. Sometimes when we take it home, we have to clean it. We're not going to just bring it home and just leave it there for my grandpa. We're not going to let me get away with that, you know. So I was one of those person who liked to learn, you know, those things because I was lazy to work on anything. But he told us, if we need anything, we have to try get them. And we're not going to try cripple animals and everything. Because animals is really, if you kill too many of them, then there'll be nothing around here, he used to tell us. Because he told us a story about how they used to just barely survive years ago. There was nothing because when one caribou come around, or five caribou, they killed them all. That's all come, no more. Like moose and bear, there was just barely enough for them to survive year round. So when he starts see us hunting with bunches of shells and everything, you know, we're going to kill too many if we got a lot of shells. So he used to really work on me that I don't kill too many for nothing. A lot of times I used to get really nervous. I wouldn't kill a bunch of caribou when I was young. But a good thing I never shoot that good, you know. But when we get anything, then my grandfather used to tell us we have to share it with some other people. We have to haul it. And that this is once or time, you know, with two or three ducks, we have to haul it. And we haul it to like the village or in Alicacket. My grandfather would pass it around, you know, little piece. It was not big piece, you know, little piece, whatever we haul. Then we have nothing again. But that's the way it was with our old people. Everything you have to share with people. And then, yeah, they teach us how to go out alone in the area. We have to know the area real good. He tell us, if a storm come, always track yourself back while you're out there. You never try to make shortcut or anything. If you know you're lost, even it's late in the evening, you have to come back in your old tracks. If it's storming, snowing, you can, you don't know where you are, you have to turn back. Never try to make shortcut. I learned that by myself when I was 16 years old. I got lost. Stay overnight out in the woods, what is quite a ways away from the South Fork cabin. It's me and my brother William. William was there. I took all the dogs. He let me go all caribou meat. And I get to the caribou meat. It was this clear day. And I would tie the dogs. left them.
Mm-hmm.
I just walk around a little ways, of course, it's really good weather, a lot of caribou tracks. I want to see my own caribou, kill caribou. So I just walk a little ways and hear fresh caribou tracks. I start tracking them.
Mm-hmm.
While I was tracking them, one blow come up. I never watched what was going on. I was just looking for the caribou. That's all. Pretty soon I started hearing one blow and everything. Snowing, you can't even see about 100 feet.
Oh my.
Storm.
Uh-huh.
And while I was tracking caribou, I didn't know I went the wrong direction. With thinking, I never even thought about what my grandpa used to say, track yourself back.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to make a shortcut. I know where my trail was, I thought, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just going that direction. But when it started to get dark, I shot four caribou. I never even take the guts out or nothing. I had no food. All I had was teapot, little bucket.
Mm-hmm.
No food, no nothing. I never even touched the caribou. I want to go back to my dogs. Just keep walking. But when it started to get dark, this was in November, warm,
mm-hmm.
good thing, snowing, warm. But anyway, I had warm clothes, I had caribou skin parking, no axe. So first thing, I started looking for burnt timber, old burnt timber, because my grandpa put that into me so much. He told me, if you something happened to your axe, always look for a place where you knock trees down and
mm-hmm.
pile it before you get cold, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So first thing, I have no axe and I start cleaning, find a place where I could knock trees down. I find a whole bunch of burnt timber and what is about 4 inch in diameter, you know, the big ones. I knock them all down, pile them, then dark. I dig the snow down, pile little snow in the back, and make big fire, and stay there all night. I sleep off and on, because my grandfather teach me how to stay overnight out in the camp like that before.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of know how to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was hungry, caribou meat little ways, and can't even go back, too dark. 7:30 in the morning, I don't know how. Well, he had to watch William.
Mm-hmm.
He said he'd stay in the house till 11 o'clock at night. No, nobody come back.
Mm-hmm.
Snowing, blowing. But he was young and tough. He could, I don't know, that 10 miles out where our dogs was about 1 hour for him, I guess.
Oh, why?
Because he could run everything. Uh-huh. He was just light. They got to me 7:30 in the morning. He said, I thought you'd die someplace. I thought I was going to find you dead someplace. That's all he told me.
Oh my.
All day, he told me, let's go hunting caribou, we'll get fresh caribou meat. When it get daylight, we start to hunt around lots of caribou, and we never see nothing all day. So that's 2 days now, I never eaten all night. But I was just 16 years old after 2 days, and I was not even hungry. Late in the evening, we come back, and I have to go get the dogs. I never eat and I go back to dogs and he makes shortcut to our house.
Mm-hmm.
He come home way ahead of me. I come back somewhere on after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So that 2 days and 2 days and a half about I never eat.
Wow.
I learned my lesson. So I still tell that story today to young boys, you know, once in a while when I get a chance.
That's a good one.
You always turn back. Never try and make shortcut someplace. If you know you're lost, turn back, follow your tracks back, if you could follow it back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was something else I was going to tell you. You might as well stop it for a while.
We need to take a little.
You know what my grandpa Big William trying to teach us more was, you know, that sharing food and he was working on food, like even if man don't get anything into that pot latch they're putting up,
mm-hmm.
even if he don't get anything, if he just work on that meat, just by himself without anybody telling him, here, work on this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He would just get there, work on it, just by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He said that's the biggest man there is around the whole area, you know. A person that really, even he don't get nothing, you know, but he like to work on the food.
Mm-hmm.
That's the person. He's the one like the biggest man in the Patlatch
mm-hmm.
place. If you're lazy and you stay back, he said, that's not the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Without anybody telling you, you know, how you're supposed to work,
mm-hmm.
he used to tell us, just go out there and try to help along with the Patlatch.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay back, he said, the people is not going to like that, you know. With the other people, because there's a lot of people trying to help all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what it's still going on today around our home, I think all over, you know, because, but our area, and like around Glena, mm-hmm. Tana, all those places I went to before, and I've gone to different place really, but around that area,
mm-hmm.
I went to, it's still the same way, because mm-hmm. I see how even young people always run out there and try to help right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And he tell us, that passing food around, before you go sit down, he said, you have to finish that food first. Make sure there's nothing out there if you're passing it. It's not like white man covered this no more.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to finish all that food before you sit down, because you're already out there. If you come back, he said, if you're going to hunt, you're going to have a hard time getting something, because you know how, like you turn it down, you work out there for a little while there's small, yet you turn back.
I see.
That make it hard for you to, when you start hunt alone, you're going to have hard time to get something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what he really talked about while I was growing up. I know how they try to teach those girls and everything, and they try to let them put up little things, even the small girls, like 8 or 9 years old girls, they give them little dry fish, you know,
mm-hmm.
little pack of dry fish, that's mm-hmm. for them to learn how to donate, you know, mm-hmm. share with
mm-hmm.
other people. If they have little boys and somebody get black bear with fat on it, they cut the fat off stuff, you know, and they make kind of one little package, you know, this is not covered, you know, but one little piece, they give them to a little boy, you know, put it out there and call it. Those old people watch you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They walk out there and shut it down. That's those people that will learn something.
Mm-hmm.
They will learn how to share. There's a lot of things he teach me what I'm supposed to remember after I get old and I start remembering them. I think back and think about it. And I tell story to our kids once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to get his pictures, everything to put on book someday. We got most of all our pictures at home in Alcacket right mm-hmm. now, so we don't have anything but black and white pictures.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe when we review the tape, you'll be in Alcacket and I can make some copies of those pictures, and we can work out something to get some copies of those mm-hmm. pictures. That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of other things that we may have left out at this point? We can come back to this topic again. We don't have to do it all now.
I know. We've kind of run out of thoughts on it. You know, when I think it's about time we stop. You know, maybe I'll think of some more. You know, I know there's lots of more.
Okay.
You know.